In the United States, the Republican Party seized control of the House of Representatives, scoring the chamber's biggest party turnover in more than 70 years. The Republicans also gained at least 6 seats in the Senate, although the Democratic Party still holds the majority. President Barack Obama now faces the potential for legislative gridlock that could stymie his agenda in the final half of his term. Charles Collins spoke to the editor-at-large of the U.S. political magazine National Review Online, Catherine Jean Lopez. He asked her about the significance of the election.
It was fairly significant in as much as a couple of months ago, it was still in question whether Republicans would take the House, and they certainly have the House of Representatives here. In recent days, right before the election, there was a lot of high expectation setting where the Republicans were going to take both houses by large margins. Now, that didn't necessarily happen, but the message that was sent was that Barack Obama and his current record, legislative record, does not have a mandate from the American people. We knew that. We've been watching that for a year and a half now as people protested his health care legislation, for instance. And this was a little bit of a confirmation of that, or a big electoral confirmation of that. It also, since we're on Vatican Radio here, yesterday we had Old Souls Day on Election Day. And there is a little purgatorial aspect to the election results on that night. I'm on Capitol Hill, and I'm noticing that Republicans aren't necessarily breaking out the champagne or celebrating. Actually, they're getting to work because they know that they have miles to go yet before they actually have a victory. They've been here before. During the Clinton years, they got the majority. Newt Gingrich became Speaker of the House, albeit not for long. And they messed up, and they know that. And so there's a reconciliation about this where they know that if they mess up again, the American people won't be all that merciful, frankly. The other thing that may be of particular interest to people who are listening to this is, in addition to the one component of this healthcare legislation, a huge component of this healthcare legislation, was the mistruth about abortion funding. It does, in fact, fund abortion. There aren't adequate prohibitions, and there were never adequate prohibitions in the law itself as passed. And so a number of pro-life Democrats who voted for it anyway were voted out yesterday, and a lot of pro-life groups are considering that a significant victory for truth, among other things.
Now, you mentioned the protests over the last 18 months or so. The Tea Party has been all over the news. How significant was the Tea Party in this election? And do you think it'll still be around in 2012?
I think it was significant. I think there were, we're still combing through the exit polls, but the polls prior to the election suggested that a lot of independents, a lot of people who had never been involved before were involved. Women, there were huge numbers of women leaders of the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party movement, of course, people talk about it as a party, right? but it's not a political party. It's not an organized whole. There are some groups that make some claims to it. But the fact of the matter is you could live in wherever Tennessee and start a Tea Party group, and it's legitimate if you organize people and it's really about sort of a civic renewal. There's something real there. What you got as a result in some cases, for instance, I don't think it's fair in the Nevada Senate race to blame Sharon Engel for her loss. I think it's remarkable that someone who was a relative political novice came as far as she did. But people, some of the Monday morning quarterbacking, so to speak, suggest that if the more polished Republican had won the primary and had been the Republican nominee, Sue Loudon, she may have been able to beat Harry Reid. These are one of these what ifs of history. But there's a lot of the political analysis the day after has been, the quality of a candidate, the experience of a candidate counts. I think you actually could look at a lot of congressional races, however, and say that the quality was an authenticity, maybe not political savvy, but an authenticity. A number of those people did win in the end. As to the question of the staying power of the Tea Party movement, I hope it's not a cop-out, but I don't know. Only time will tell. I'm personally encouraging people who were engaged in this election for the first time, perhaps, or engaged on a more intense level than they ever had been before, to stay involved, to pay attention to what's going on. There are plenty of groups that they can join who keep an eye on Congress already, who have offices in Washington. Or maybe one of these groups creates some kind of liaison to Tea Party groups in the future, where they become some kind of lobbying presence. I think that's going to be a large... That's how we're going to see if the Tea Party stays. Does it stay involved, keep pressure on, and how does it get involved in the presidential election?
This was a big win for the Republicans, but it was also, in many ways, a new face for the Republicans, at least in popular image. There were several prominent Hispanics who were elected to governorships, the senator in Florida. There are even two African-American House members of the Republican Party, a South Asian-descended governor in South Carolina. How significant is this aspect of the election that you saw a lot of minority Republican faces out there?
Well, I think it really just sort of knocks out of the public analysis this caricature of Republicans as an all-white male country club party. It's not, and it's reflected in some of these wins. I would argue, and I don't think there'd be a lot of opposition amongst people who are even half paying attention, that the most prominent Republican in the United States next year will probably be Marco Rubio, a Catholic who is Hispanic, Cuban, his parents were Cuban exiles, who is just articulate. He he's also the epitome of the Tea Party in the sense that in his primary, this race has been going on since 2009, the Senate race, which is kind of crazy, but it's been going on for a long time. The Republicans early on endorsed the current governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, who I believe came in third on Election Day in the end. Crist lost the primary. Marco Rubio, by his own talent, was able to win that primary because he's so articulate and such a hard worker. When Charlie Crist had all of the party resources and all of the momentum, and everyone was saying the Republican Party's reason for endorsing him was that he was just inevitable. Well, yeah, no. I always say ever since Hillary Clinton didn't become president of the United States or even Democratic nominee, I say nothing in politics is inevitable, and that certainly was true here. But Marco Rubio, I think, may prove to be one of the Republicans' most prominent voices, and again on his own merit, because he knows his stuff and he cares about his country, and yeah, that certainly changes the face of the Republican Party. The other quick thing I want to mention is on my last count, I know it's higher now, but my last count, there were 14 pro-life women, Republican women, who had been elected on Election Day. This is the year, there were some losses. I would have loved to have seen Carly Fiorina in California beat Barbara Boxer. Amazing that she came as close as she did. But Carly Fiorina was somebody who was challenged. Barbara Boxer made abortion an issue in California. That's not a winning issue if you're pro-life. But Carly Fiorina wouldn't back down. and that got some attention. Sarah Palin got a lot of attention. This was the year, I firmly believe, where the media had to admit that pro-life women exist. And I think that rocked American politics a little bit this year, too.